Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavitah Vahim. With 1 week to go to Iran's presidential election, the third and final debate with Iran's presidential hopefuls took place, and it was a lively one. While the first two debates dealt with mainly domestic issues, the third installment covered politics and foreign policy, in which all candidates this time around were a bit more aggressive in their stances, many defending their past performances. Now, in this debate, we'll be discussing how they did on the topic for their debate, namely, it was foreign and domestic policy, and also sum up their previous performances, which included the economy and culture.
With less than a week to go before the 11th presidential election, candidates took advantage of the third and final televised debate to energize their bases and score points on politics. The big questions during the heated debate were on foreign policy, national security and resistance, the challenge of a changing Middle East, the new face of state terrorism, and of course, Iran's nuclear energy program.
You are the same person, Mr. Rezai, who said in our group that the United Nations Security Council is much better than the Board of Governors. Why has Mr. Rouhani stopped this so that our nuclear dossier would not go from governors, Board of Governors to Security Council? You are the very same person. And now you are here and advising us. We don't want to mention these things because you just started, and that's why I'm responding. I have your other words and opinions in the first nuclear meetings that we had that were totally, absolutely secret. Which website unveiled and publicized everything? Who was present in that meeting? Mr. Velayati was there, and he knows which website publicized these things. It was just a salvage country from a threat. There was no threat, no danger. Iran was in a position of power. The two sides were making threats. There was some dangerous situation, but we were able to deal with it when we went and dealt with that powerfully, and it was in such a way that they came and asked for negotiations
on
those issues.
1 minute. I wish to confirm what Dr. Rezai said. Dr. Larijani, in his talks with Solana, had reached a good point, and as Dr. Rezai mentioned, the set number of dimension, number of centrifuges were agreed, and later Solana retreated from his position.
The relation between the combatants, fighters, and military moves with politics is a two-sided link. During your time for 16 years, it has always been unilateral. Unilaterally, you have always used the capacity of our combatants and their sacrifice to the benefit of foreign policy. Foreign policy never went to the help of the combatants.
The final debate was also a perfect chance for candidates to try and reach out to voters and present themselves as presidential by addressing domestic challenges. The big questions were social media freedom, civil rights, privacy rights of individuals, and of course, freedom of expression.
Now my question is, who is responsible for the present situation? And the comments are made in the past two debate sessions, nothing was mentioned. People have the right to know who has been responsible for the status quo, and it's a good idea to speak about the principalist camp.
Dr. Rezai speaks in such a way as if we are, referring to myself, and I'm an unpopular person, we pay no attention to the people, and he is the only one who pays attention to the people. All of us, we are all, paying attention to the people's needs, and our intention is to support the people and mayor.
So instead of dealing with these things, this is the right place through negotiations at the ministries and organizations. This is the place where everyone should talk about his own capacities and prove it.
This is a good historical experience. But it should not be said that any one of us seek to disclose others. But in fact, this indicates the honesty of the officials towards the people.
In terms of persuasion, no one still knows for sure who won over the television audience. What's possible is that the high number of candidates will likely split the vote and take the race to a second round, unless those with a small performance decide to step aside and let those running neck and neck take the race to its final stage. Friday, June the 14th. Aman Nodiri reporting for Press TV.
A great rundown there of some of the statements made by the presidential hopefuls. Let me introduce our guest from the University of Tehran. We have Fuad Izadi joining us here in the studios. Fuad Izadi, welcome. You just heard some of the statements made there by the presidential hopefuls. What did you think?
Well, I think the debate was quite lively. I think the people who were present were basically defending their past performances. I think what Dr. Arif was trying to do was basically re-emphasize the fact that he was President Khatami's first vice president. He a couple of times mentioned that President Khatami's pictures and his pictures are being shown together by his supporters, and basically trying to get the reformers' vote for himself. As you know, there are two reformer candidates. One is Dr. Arif, and the other one is Dr. Rouhani. Dr. Rouhani was the secretary of Iran's National Security Council, both during the presidency of Hashemi Rafsanjani and presidency of Khatami, President Khatami. So these two candidates, reformist candidates, are competing with each other for the reformist vote, and Arif was basically trying to say that he is the true representative of the reformers by mentioning Khatami's name several times. Dr. Rouhani was basically defending, for the most part, his policies with regard to the nuclear issue during President Khatami's administration. On the other side, we had Saeed Jalili, who is the current Secretary of National Security Council, and he was in an odd position because he is not the current president's candidate. Ahmadinejad has never supported him, but he found himself to be defending Ahmadinejad's foreign policy. We had other candidates obviously present. Dr. Ghalibaf was sort of trying to say that beside being a mayor of Tehran, he also knows foreign policy and he's well-versed in domestic policy as well. Dr. Haddad Adel, who was the speaker of Iran's parliament some years ago, was trying to do the same, basically was saying that he is quite capable of handling the crisis that may come up in Iran's foreign relations. The other candidates, Dr. Rezai and Mr. Gharazi, were also trying to do the same. What is interesting, I think, is the fact that by comparing their past performances in the positions that they had, they were trying to make the point that they will be the true choice of the people who want to have change in what's going on in Iran. I think what was interesting is that all of them were indirectly saying that they were not really successful in terms of getting the Western countries to come in terms with Iran's Islamic Revolution and Iran's independence, and that is one of the ideas that was basically presented there, that none of them, in fact, were successful in terms of being able to get the other side to come in terms with Iran's needs in terms of its foreign relations. So overall, I think we had a good debate.
Right. And of course, that leaves open the question whether the U.S., along with some of its allies, are open for negotiations on this. Let me introduce our other guest from the Center for American Progress. We have Lawrence Korb joining us from Washington. Lawrence Korb, welcome. We're just 1 week away from Iran's presidential election, a very crucial one. How is this being covered in the Western media, in particular in the U.S.?
Well, I think the media is asking a couple of questions. Will the new president have as much power as some of his predecessors, or will he have less power as President Ahmadinejad did toward the end of his term? The next question they're asking is about what will be the turnout in terms of the people voting. The third question that they're asking basically is, what will be the issues? Will the relationship between the sanctions and the economy and the nuclear program be an issue? And then, you know, finally, will anybody get enough votes in the opening round to actually be elected, or will we have to go to a second round?
Well, why don't you take your pick of one of the questions you just asked and answer them, of how the media has been covering it based on the questions that you said they had proposed in their coverage.
Well, basically, what the media is saying is that the president, whoever succeeds President Ahmadinejad, is not going to be as powerful as Ahmadinejad was when he first came in, or some of his predecessors, that power has gone from the office of the president more toward the Supreme Council. That's one of the things that they are saying. The other thing is, will the election really be open, and will it be conducted fairly? You may remember back when the media covered the re-election of President Ahmadinejad, there were concerns about whether, in fact, it was open, whether the ballots were counted fairly, given the fact that in some districts it was overwhelmingly supporting Ahmadinejad, when, in fact, the other candidates were, you know, from the other candidate was from that area.
Very well. Fuad Izadi, interesting point that Lawrence Korb raises there, that this time around, at least the U.S. side doesn't think that there's going to be as much power, as our guest there said, as Ahmadinejad had, and it's going to be going more towards, I forget what office terminology Lawrence Korb used, but basically that the incoming president is not going to have as much power. Is that how you see it? Do you agree with him?
Well, interestingly, that is one of the questions that the moderator asked. And the question was, based on your reading of Iran's constitution, asked the candidates, based on your readings of Iran's constitution, do you think you will have enough power to carry out your plans and the proposals that you are making? And what was more interesting is that all candidates, all eight of them, basically said yes. They said that based on the current laws that the country is governed under, the president has a lot of power to carry out what he is sort of promising to the people. So I think that question is not a major issue. I think every one of them basically agrees on that. I think what is interesting with the news media coverage is the fact that what I have been reading in the mainstream corporate news media in the United States and a number of European countries is the idea that they are trying to present that the elections in Iran are not free and fair. And I was reading a Reuters report based on today's debate, and there was no mention of existence of someone like Dr. Aref, who was President Khatami's first vice president, and in fact was raising a number of major issues and criticizing Ahmadinejad's foreign policy. I think this type of criticism was a big part of today's debate. In fact, Dr. Velayati, who is listed as a candidate under the reformist camp, under the principalist camp, was also criticizing Ahmadinejad's foreign policy. And in fact, a big part of the debate was criticism of what was going on in the last 8 years or so. So I think what the Western media is trying to do is not mention the fact that there are serious reformist candidates that are criticizing the current foreign policy of the Iranian government, and the fact that the debates are quite lively. And I think they are doing that because they don't want to acknowledge the fact that Iran has a democracy with all political leniencies and parties having major representatives. Both reformists and principalists have representatives, and we have three independent candidates that are present in the race. And this is the way the Western media, unfortunately, the mainstream Western media is covering the elections, which is a disservice to their audience, which needs to know what's going on in Iran.
And those are very good points, Lawrence Korb, because when it comes down to it, you know, when we want to look at something that Iran has raised in the past number of times, mutual respect comes to mind here. And, you know, you have the Secretary of State, John Kerry, that has come out criticizing Iran's democratic election process. You have these sanctions, smart sanctions, they call it, lifting the selling of communication equipment and internet access. But yet you have sanctions targeting Iran's real auto industry, including the petrochemical industry, yet exempting some countries from oil sales. One way or another, the U.S. Has to be prepared to engage in the any administration of any of these candidates that's going to be incoming. Are they prepared to do that?
Well, I think they are. And you may remember that President Obama, his representative, and President Ahmadinejad, back in 2009, President Ahmadinejad agreed to one of the proposals, which was to ship the enriched uranium to Russia. But when he got back home, he was overruled by the Ayatollah and his people. So I think that's the issue. They'd be more than willing to negotiate. The real question is, will this person who gets elected, will he have the power to make the decision, or can it be overruled by a non-elected group? And I think that's the real dilemma. The United States would be more than willing to negotiate with someone who can speak for the regime and who can make an agreement that both sides can and live with. And remember, those are not just U.S. sanctions. They're U.N. sanctions. It's the international community, which has been negotiating with the so-called P5 plus one at several places all around the world with the Iranian representatives over the last year and a half with nothing to show for it.
Fotizadi, since we're talking about the nuclear file here a little bit, Lawrence Korb talked about it there. You know, we just had the Board of Governors meeting wrap up. Iran's ambassador, Dr. Ali Asghar Soltani, came up with a very interesting point that said both the CIA and Mossad have been feeding information to the agency, keeping the agency busy. When it came down to it, there were false documents or false facts given. This was even confirmed by AFP in terms of documents that the U.S. had handed the agency. So talk about how Iran's nuclear file is being twisted. Iran has said, many of the officials, that it's the West that's buying time. It's the United States in particular that is buying time. Are we looking at any one of these figures coming in from Iran that perhaps is going to at least soften this knot, this nuclear knot that exists between Iran and the West and the P5 plus one?
Yes. The issue of Iran's nuclear program was a major part of today's debate. And there were quite different ideas with regard to how to go ahead with the coming months and years and how to deal with the Western side on this issue. What is certainly, I think, true with regard to Iran's nuclear program is that for the last 10 years or so, since the issue of Iran's nuclear program became an issue, there has not been any problem on the Iranian side with regard to reaching an agreement. Iran is following International Atomic Energy Agency's rules with regard to its nuclear program. Iran's nuclear facilities are being visited by the agency's representatives on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. They are monitoring Iran's nuclear facilities with cameras 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day. And there is no problem with Iran's president and Iran's leader with regard to the nuclear issue. The problem is that whenever Iran says yes to the American side, they cannot take a yes from Iran. We had this issue some time ago. The president of Brazil and the prime minister of Turkey came to Iran and they had a proposal that the U.S. government, President Obama, asked them to take to Iran. Iran said yes to that proposal, and when Iran said yes, Obama administration backed out. And we have some Western analysts who want to play this game of the president and the leader, and we have to ask this question, what's going on in the U.S. when Obama says, calls the presidents of Brazil and the prime minister of Turkey and asks them to do something, and then they come to Iran and they take a yes for that proposal. Do they have a supreme leader in the United States that vetoed Obama's president, Obama's proposal. We have major problems on the other side with regard to how they want to deal with Iran. They want to sanction Iran to death, basically. They are punishing Iranian people for having an Islamic revolution 34 years ago. And we have the audacity of someone like James Clapper, who is the head of the director of national intelligence, 2 months ago, in April, he goes to the Senate and he says that he is not sure that the Iranian government is making has decided to make a nuclear weapon. The transcripts are available on the Senate side. And the question is that if you're not sure that the Iranian government is making a nuclear weapon, has decided to make a nuclear weapon, why are you sanctioning the Iranian people in this animalistic way, in this very harsh way, and just causing a lot of problem for the Iranian people? So that is one point that I think needs to be clear with regards to Iran's nuclear issue, that the Western governments, especially the United States, are basically overseeing a very failed policy with regard to Iran, and they don't have the will to change it because of the Israeli lobby and all the problems that they have there. And the other point that I think needs to be mentioned is that, we hear from Western analysts that the presidency here in Iran is an elected office, and the supreme leader is not popularly elected, is not an elected office. And this is also not true. The presidency, obviously, people vote for the president directly, and for the supreme leader, they basically vote for a body, and that body elects the leader, the body that is popularly voted. And this is exactly the same way that the U.S. presidents get elected. U.S. presidents don't get elected by direct vote. They have some crazy mechanism. They call it the Electoral College. And it's the Electoral College that elects the president. So if the supreme leader is not elected, we have to say the same thing about President Obama. He is not an elected leader. And this is a problem that we see in Western analysis, that they sort of create a monster from Iran, and they come up with analysis that is not true at all.
I thought I saw a reaction from you, Lawrence Korb. Do you have a reaction for Azadi's statement there?
Well, I think, for example, with the Electoral College, yes, the Electoral College votes, but they go by the popular vote in each state because the United States is a federal system, so they can't vote for whoever they want. They have to follow what the people in the state do. The other is that President Obama, when he came into office, reached out to the Iranian government, and basically they didn't respond, and he took a lot of political heat here back in the United States because of that. And remember, it's not just the United States. It's the international community, the UN, based upon what they hear from the International Atomic Energy Agency. And there are places where the IAEA wants to go, and the Iranian government, whoever in charge, is not letting them go. And that's the reason for it. And finally, what General Clapper said, he doesn't know when they will actually have a bomb. And I think that was the issue. The real question is, are they moving in that direction, or are they not?
Finally, Fuad Azadi, quickly, if you can, we talk about the states so much in terms of Iran, its relationship. Does Iran need the United States in the big picture when it has the support of over 100 countries from the NAM, not to mention, obviously, relationships economically and business-wise with these 100 countries, and to continue with the self-sufficiency, as it has proved, through sanctions in different areas within the country?
U.S. is declining as a major power because of major problems that they have inside the country. I was looking at what Richard Haass, the president of Council on Foreign Relations, was saying with regard to economic problems that they have. So little by little, they are sort of disappearing from the thoughts of Iranians for the most part, because they're disappearing as a major country. That issue needs to be reemphasized. The other thing I think we have to remember is that the President Obama, when he first came to office, talked about reaching to Iran, but we have the WikiLeaks documents that on the same month that he was talking about reaching out to Iran,
okay,
he was sending representatives to Europe
Fuad
and saying
Azadi,
that they are continuing the Bush administration.
We're fresh out of time. I do apologize for that. That's Fuad Azadi from the University of Tehran talking to us here in the studios. Also like to thank Lawrence Korb from the Center for American Progress. And thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitaly and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.